Welcome to S&C's Critical Insights. I'm Annie Ostrager, and I co-head our labor and employment group, and I'm also a member of our Workplace Investigations, Whistleblower, and Criminal Defense and Investigations group. Joining me today from our DC office is Neil Shields, who's also a partner in our litigation group and a former prosecutor.
Hello, Annie. Thanks so much. Today, we're going to discuss recent developments relevant to whistleblower enforcement investigations and programs, which is a topic that you and I have previously discussed on S&C's Critical Insights. We'll cover the uptick in enforcement actions and investigations into employment and other agreements that regulators view as potentially impeding, preventing, or discouraging whistleblower activity. And we'll also discuss new programs aimed at further incentivizing whistleblower reporting to the government. Then we'll wrap up with recommendations and takeaways for employers. So Annie, could you start us off with some background to frame our discussion?
Yes, I'd be happy to. As you previewed, this is a significant and growing area of enforcement activity. And while the SEC was the first mover here, we're seeing other agencies getting involved now too. The backdrop for all of this activity is the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, as modified by Dodd-Frank, which provides general protections and incentives for whistleblowers who report potential violations of the securities laws. Along with general protections against retaliation and assurances of anonymity, Dodd-Frank incentivizes potential whistleblowers to come forward with information by authorizing the SEC to grant awards to whistleblowers. The SEC has issued regulations stemming from this statutory authority to create its whistleblowing program, which it describes as implementing these provisions of Dodd-Frank. We'll focus on this podcast on one SEC rule in the whistleblowing program, Rule 21F17A, but as we'll touch on a bit later, the CFTC does have a parallel rule, and other agencies like the NLRB are similarly active in this space.
So, Annie, as you previously noted, SEC Rule 21F17A has been the basis for a number of enforcement actions. And just quickly, that rule provides that, quote, no person may take any action to impede an individual from communicating directly with the commission about a possible securities law violation, including enforcing or threatening to enforce a confidentiality agreement, end quote. In other words, no person, including any company, may employ language or engage in conduct that discourages whistleblowing or interferes with the SEC's whistleblower program, a program that you and I have previously discussed. The SEC has taken a pretty expansive interpretation of this rule. First, certain of the enforcement actions that I just described have been with private companies, which means that the commission is not limiting enforcement of this rule to public issuers. Second, while the rule expressly applies to confidentiality agreements, the SEC has not limited the rule's applicability to confidentiality agreements. And we've seen language that's been challenged in settlements of a type that might seem routine or innocuous to employers. And these settlements have gone beyond employment agreements. Notably, the SEC has identified violations in agreements with investors and with customers as well. And third, in many of these actions, the SEC expressly acknowledged that there was no evidence that any whistleblower had actually faced any impediment to engaging in protected conduct. Simply the existence of an agreement that could have the effect of discouraging a whistleblower itself constitutes a violation of the rule.
That's right, at least under the SEC's interpretation. And we've seen that even when agreements have some carve-out language for regulators, the SEC has taken the position that they may still violate Rule 21. For example, a carve-out for disclosing information when compelled by law or after giving notice to the company now won't work. Even an agreement where an employee is required to waive the right to any individual monetary recovery for reporting alleged misconduct has been deemed to discourage reporting and thus run afoul of the rule. Some of the agreements featured in resolutions of enforcement actions actually had language that monetary recovery was waived to the fullest extent permitted by law, but the SEC concluded that this carve-out language did not absolve the company of liability because an employee may nevertheless be discouraged from whistleblowing to the SEC.
And Annie, we should also mention non-disparagement clauses because those kinds of non-disparagement clauses have been addressed in a number of SEC settlements. It is imperative for employers that any clauses forbidding, disparaging, or harmful language about the employer have an exception for regulators like the SEC. And the SEC has found violations in connection with agreements that require or condition separation payments on an employee's representations that they have not filed any complaints or charges against the company prior to the execution date. So employers need to be thinking about and review not only what they're asking employers to represent about the company in the future, but also about the past.
Yes, and as you said, enforcement hasn't been limited to agreements between employers and their employees. We've seen enforcement actions centered on agreements with investors and customers as well. So companies should review their agreements with third parties, including investors, customers, consultants, and contractors.
And Annie, even beyond those agreements with employees and with the third parties that you just mentioned, the SEC has taken issue with language in, among other things, compliance manuals, training materials, and agreements governing processes for conducting internal investigations. So these implications of all of these kinds of agreements and statements implicating employees are broad, and counsel or internal employee relations personnel conducting internal investigations should be thoughtful about how they communicate requests for confidentiality. And while we've been discussing scope, I also want to note that while the vast majority of the SEC's actions in these areas has been related to domestic activity, foreign activity and agreements have not been treated as wholly outside the scope of this rule. And neither the text of Rule 21F17A nor Dodd-Frank Section 21F clearly contains a domestic limitation.
That's right. And in addition to that broad reach, this also isn't a regime in which alleged violations have a willfulness element. Most of the orders don't allege willfulness, and those that do point to evidence such as an employer changing one agreement to comply with the SEC's reading of 21F, but not another, or evidence of a party's knowledge about the rule and their potential liability. Willfulness, though, likely would be a factor in the commission's determination of an appropriate resolution. And on that resolution point, for standalone 21F17 resolutions, we've seen penalties from $50,000 to $18 million. The largest is also the most recent, demonstrating the continued seriousness with which the SEC views this rule. In addition to potential willfulness, factors that could inform these numbers include the SEC's view of the promptness and diligence of the company's remedial measures, such as modifications made to agreements, trainings, and the number of agreements at issue, and whether there was any actual impediment.
So, Annie, let's turn from the SEC and let's address other regulatory agencies like the CFTC and departments such as DOJ that have recently expanded their whistleblower programs and activity in the space. So I'll start with the CFTC, which in 2017 amended its Rule 165.19 to prohibit the taking of any, quote, any action to impede an individual from communicating directly with the commission staff about a possible violation of the Commodity Exchange Act, including by enforcing or threatening to enforce a confidentiality agreement or pre-dispute arbitration agreement with respect to such communications. Sounds a lot like some of the SEC language that we just discussed. The CFTC has not yet exercised this authority, but we can expect that to change. Before 2017, the CFTC interpreted the whistleblower statute in the Commodity and Exchange Act to only allow for a private cause of action, which would be brought by a party who'd been impeded from reporting. However, in 2017, the CFTC reversed that interpretation that it lacks statutory authority to bring an enforcement action against a person that impeded a whistleblower. And it amended the rule to allow the CFTC to exercise enforcement authority. And while the CFTC did not provide an in-depth explanation as to that change in interpretation, it did mention that the amended rule would lend itself to greater consistency with the SEC rule that we just discussed. Notably, a court in the Southern District of New York recently sided with the SEC in a challenge to the SEC's authority to enforce Rule 21F-17. The court agreed with the SEC that the commission had not violated the rulemaking authority in promulgating the rule, and that the SEC's interpretation of the rule was within the scope of the statute. So moving from the CFTC, let's talk about the Department of Justice. In January of this year, the United States Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York announced the creation of a whistleblower pilot program, which is effective in February. The program outlines a path to non-prosecution for whistleblowers who come forward voluntarily and offer new information and cooperate with SDNY. This whistleblower pilot program is especially focused on financial crimes. Now, while the Department of Justice has previously announced criteria that prosecutors can take into account with respect to non-prosecution agreements and cooperation agreements in a number of contexts, providing specific information about how a whistleblower would not be prosecuted is fairly innovative.
Yes, agreed, Camille. And this idea is spreading. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of California also recently announced a similar program, though theirs is focused on intellectual property cases. And just over a week ago, the Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco announced a new DOJ whistleblower program that will compensate whistleblowers for reporting corporate or financial misconduct previously unknown to DOJ. This is the first monetary incentive program of its kind for DOJ, and its potential reach is sprawling. In announcing the program, Deputy Attorney General Monaco referenced an image from the past, the Wanted poster, leaving a remarkable impression in the minds of listeners and alluding to the seriousness of what the DOJ anticipates is to come. The program will be rolled out in what Deputy AG Monaco called a 90-day sprint, and the formal start date is to be later this year. Deputy AG Monaco said that with the program, the DOJ is particularly interested in information about abuses of U.S. financial systems as well as corruption. These announcements demonstrate the department's heightened interest in promoting and incentivizing whistleblowers. Deputy AG Monaco said that their message to whistleblowers is clear. The Department of Justice wants to hear from them, and those considering a voluntary self-disclosure, she said, their message is equally clear. Knock on their door before they knock on yours.
Well, that is very, very strong. So, Annie, let's talk a bit about some of the takeaways for employers as they're considering the landscape that we just discussed. I'll start with a few. First, confidentiality provisions must contain a carve-out for reporting to regulators, and should not condition any such disclosure on prior notification to company or obtaining consent of the company. Second, non-disparagement provisions cannot prevent reporting to regulators, even if the provision allows disclosure as may be required by law or legal process. Third, agreements should not limit an employee's ability to obtain a whistleblower award from the SEC. And fourth, agreements may not deter or hinder employee participation in government investigations and or proceedings.
Yes, and in addition, agreements should not require an employee to notify their employer if they're contacted by a regulator. Separation agreements should not require that a departing employee represent that they have not filed any complaint with the government, even if there are no other prohibitions on filing such a charge. And it's clear that given the breadth of the actions we've seen to date and the signals that this will be a continued area of scrutiny, that companies should review more than their employment agreements, and they should review agreements with third parties, their internal materials that you discussed, Camille, and some of their procedures. There are a number of avenues through which this can come on the radar of enforcement staff, and that will sometimes, but not always, involve a whistleblower. And finally, because this is a developing area where we may see further changes and positions staked out by regulators, companies should watch for unrelated investigations where this is tacked on as an area of inquiry, which we've seen in other sweep-like investigations.
That's right. And we're staying up to date on these developments. So please be in touch, employers and listeners, if we can help you as you navigate this space. I do want to give a shout out to my co-presenter, to Annie Ostreicher, who is involved in expert Q&A by Practical Law. There's a January 2024 Q&A related to SEC scrutiny of employment agreements, which we've been discussing. As well, Annie and others in the Labor and Employment Group have a blog, Legal Developments Affecting the Workplace. You can find both the expert Q&A and the blog on the Labor and Employment Group's webpage at www.sulcrom.com. We also want to thank you for listening to this SNC Critical Insights. More information about our practices, both labor and employment and criminal defense and investigations, can also be found on our website. And we look forward to discussing more of these whistleblower developments in the future.